Blog Talk Radio.
Buckle Turmoil fans, QT with you on this first Sunday of the Trump inauguration. Mr. Trump, being the first U.S. president to survive a stone-cold stunner in the ring and also be elected to the WWE Hall of Fame. Sign Guy is on assignment working his straight job and hopefully will be with us in the second half of the show. We also hope that Sign Guy is recovering from his Diafola Debashi beer bottle attack that he suffered at La Problemita's in Bremerton, Washington. And I was there to witness. I did not send in a hot nurse. In action that I regret to this day. Yes, I should have called for a hot nurse. All right, well, today we have with us Nikita Brezhnikov. Most of you diehard wrestling fans and historians will remember that Nikita was a member of Nikolai Volkov, but a lot of you don't know that he was in movies such as Heroes of Wrestling in 1999, The Wrestler 2008, and Brush of Danger in 2015. Nikita, welcome to the show.
It is my immense pleasure. And let me tell you, QT, maybe Sign Guy, maybe he got kidnapped by maybe some Russian spies come to get him, you know, since he was helping out with the Trump and all that. You never know. We're always there.
Oh, now, wait, you just brought up a very good point, kidnapped. Okay. Now, Diafola Debashi is from, Yemen, or maybe Iraq. Pretty much Yemen. Yemen, I'm going to settle on that, the port city of Yemen, our country.
Okay.
I saw him cracked in the head with a beer bottle. Kidnapped, I'm not too sure about that. But, maybe some guy was trying to pull a work on me and saying that he had to work today. However, Diafola Debashi raised his, how would you say, ironclad hand that was gripping a beer bottle and kidnapped him today. I will have to look into this.
Aye, aye. Anything is possible. QT, you know one thing is true. The easiest thing in the world to get is a wrong answer, so keep that in mind.
Oh, a wrong answer. Okay, very good. All right. I will keep that. That's very good street knowledge on your part. I sense a street knowledge to you. Yes, okay. Very good.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, Nikita, our first question we always ask, and it's in our contract to ask this, is how did you get started in this crazy business?
Well, being a absolute fanatic all the way back to the 70s, it became religion to us. And it was believable back at that time. I don't knock the product today. I respect everyone that steps through the ropes into the squared circle, but it just seems to me that the 1970s, you couldn't beat it. We had transgressed from the 20-minute headlock, then we had some action, some activity, but it was there for us, always there. I suffered child abuse at home, and it just, they spoke to me. When you would watch the promos leading up to the monthly events that would be there, and they were monthly, too. Every month they would be at the Baltimore Civic Center, and the place would be sold out. It just meant so much to me. So through the years, you know, we passed on, and I was working for the police department. A lot of people don't know I'm a retired detective sergeant from Baltimore. So I see an advertisement in a convenience store, you know, the old posters that we all still use, advertising a local indie show, and I see that Nikolai Volkoff was going to be there. So it's like, oh, wow, this is an opportunity. Now, I hadn't been following wrestling for a while at that point. This goes all the way back into the 90s. So I am an avid tape collector from the old school matches prior to the Hogan era. So I thought, well, maybe I talk to the Nikolai. Maybe he has a line on something. So I go there. I'm in uniform. And lo and behold, here comes Nikolai walking through the door. But we never knew each other at that point. He looks at me, he says, hello, Sergeant. I said, hello, Nikolai. So then he got dressed in the locker room. He came out to sell some photos, like we do before the shows. And so I go over, I start to talk to him. And from there, we struck up a friendship. And the friendship that just grew and grew, and I kept pestering him. I said, Nikolai, I want to get into the wrestling. He said, no. You have a good job. We all get hurt. Well, you don't need to do that. I said, but I want to. So then he came up with the idea of being the manager. I said, I don't want to be a stupid manager. So he said, no. You think about it. You know lots about the business manager. You'd be involved with everything. So then I said, oh, that's all I can do. Then I take it. You know, of course, now I'll tell you this, QT. My idol as I grew up was Chief J. Strongbow. So, of course, I wanted to be Indian. I have everything, headdress, boots, bells. Nikolai said, how the heck you could be Indian? I'm Russian, you goof. I said, yeah, okay, that won't work. So then, boom, we developed my character. And from there, we just grew. And through the years, I said, Nikolai, I'm looking at a lot of these guys. I think I outweigh them. He said, yeah, I think you were. We tag team. So then, you know, we became tag team from there. So that's how Nikita Brezhnikov was born.
Wow, fantastic. Now, you mentioned that you saw some of these wrestling posters in your early days in Baltimore. Do you have any of those posters with you as a collection? Because I got to tell you, posters of Woodstock and the Isle of Wight festivals can fetch a whole bunch of money, and so can wrestling posters. Do you have any of those wrestling posters?
No, I tell you what. Now, let me correct one thing. The posters that I'm talking about would be like from the 90s and 80s. But back in the 70s, they didn't need that. The television advertisement and a little newspaper clipping, and I've got 1,000 of newspaper clippings from over the years that I've collected, not directly from the paper, but that I keep a running collection that I see posted and things like that that I'm able to get my hands on. But as actual things, no. So they didn't need that back then. But I do have a collection of posters from different shows that I have been in. And, I mean, some of them go back to, like, Wildwood, New Jersey from, like, 99. And it's funny because I'm going to look at it right now and describe it to you. It says Al Snow with head. He was the main event for that all the way back September 3rd, 98. And then the Bushwhackers against Nikolai and Sheik. And then a great one, I was honored to be able to work in a match with Bruno Sammartino because he was refereeing. It goes all the way back to July 18th, also of 98. We were at Skylands Park in Augusta, New Jersey, and that was a minor league baseball stadium. I believe it was for the Cardinals. And Bruno was the referee. Nikolai wrestled Dominic DiNucci, so I was there. It was like I have the honor of taking a right hand from the great Bruno Sammartino. And let me tell you something. He was no young man at the time, but I had the belt wrong, and he wasn't trying to do his best, let me tell you. So I can only imagine what it must have been like, Bruno in his heyday, if he let loose on you. You probably saw stars like you never saw before. So, yeah, I do treasure a lot of these, and I keep them. And it's like a museum, you know. It's because of the passion, it's still there, and it always will be there.
Oh, my gosh. I am very honored to be talking to a man who actually took a punch from Bruno Sammartino. That guy is built. He's like I just describe him kind of like as a walking fire plug, a bulldog tenacity,
yeah,
with a feared right,
yeah,
hand. Yeah.
And
oh my
all
goodness.
Natural. You know, he never used any kind of substance. And same with Nikolai. And now, I'll tell you what, let's go back in time. when I was a kid back in the 1970s, Nikolai probably killed me when he hears that, but when he first came into the area as the Mongol gimmick with Guido Mongol, Beppo and Guido, he was only 19 years old. But he was 6 foot, about 4 and a half, and weighed 345 pounds. He was really the first giant, because that was a couple of years before Andre hit the coast. And we looked at him, and as kids we said, how the heck would Chief or Bruno be that guy? And, I mean, listen, QT, I'll tell you, the stories you hear of Nikolai's strength, Bruno too, and without a doubt, but I can testify to the Nikolai strength. You saw him crush the apples, the most famous promo and interview they had, him and Freddie Blassie in 1979, and talking, and Nikolai crushed the apples. That's legitimate. They didn't have to doctor them up or anything. I've seen him do it 100 times. And one time we were going to a show for AFA. It was near Allentown and or Hazleton, Pennsylvania. And I got a flat tire. The thing blew. It was like 2 seconds and it was flat. It was harpooned. So get out. I had a van at the time. You have to change the flat. And Nikolai said, hurry, hurry. We have to get there. We were only a few blocks away. He starts to take the nuts off with his hands. I'm like, holy man. I said, at least we're going to use the jack. He says, all right, but hurry. We have no time. Wow. Unbelievable. But such a wonderful, beautiful man. I mean, opposite, completely opposite of the old heel character that he portrayed. You couldn't find a nicer guy, believe me.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. Well, to your knowledge, did Nikolai ever step into the ring with Ernie Big Cat Ladd?
Yes. Oh, yes. He spent lots of time in Louisiana, Nikolai did. Florida.
Okay.
So, I think Ernie may have wrestled as a face a few times through different areas. But, oh, yeah, Nikolai said he wrestled the Big Cat many times. You know, it's funny. I'm not the kind of guy in that, as far as the actors go, there were a few that I really like. And then I started to take pictures with them when we would be at autograph shows and things like that. But I never chased after people. But when the original Hall of Fame, the very first one, was held in Baltimore all the way back in 1994, my very first picture with anyone was with the Big Cat, Ernie Ladd. And I tell you, the first thing he said, he was gracious to everybody. Next thing he said was, anybody seen Bobo? And I was like, wow. As many wars as they had over the years, they were very good friends still.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, another thing about Ernie Ladd, if you go back and look at all of the Hall of Fame speeches throughout the years with WWE, Ernie Ladd gave the best. Now, his was actually the one I'm referring to. He was introducing Bobo Brazil. And what Ernie Ladd said was from the heart. And here he goes, athlete with the NFL and then wrestling. And it's like he nailed it. He said more than any politician except Donald Trump, who, by the way, it's like, wow, what this man is saying and doing, it's just common sense. You know, it's like he's not a politician. That's the difference. It's kind of like, with Vince McMahon, people say what they want about him, but nobody knows more about wrestling than he does. And you just have to step aside and say, well, I might not like everything about what you do and how you do it, but I don't think there's any greater or better mind on the face of the earth that could run wrestling other than Vince.
Wow. Well, Nikita, I grew up in the 70s in the Northwest, and I had the privilege of watching Don Owens, the promoter out here, run Portland Wrestling, and he had a huge amount of stars come through Portland Wrestling, such as Stan Stasiak, with his heart punch, the Kangaroos, Lord Jonathan Boyd. He had the Von Steiger brothers from Germany, and he had Playboy Buddy Rowe, Dutch Savage, and Apache Bull Ramus. Are you familiar with Apache Bull Ramus, the wrestler?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, he was about 320, yeah. And he wore like a singlet, and he would wear the Indian headband from time to time. Yeah, Bull Ramos, he never really caught on in the East Coast. I know he made some appearances there, but that's a name that it falls back into the annals. But if you saw him, you would not forget him. And don't forget the great Moondog, Lonnie Mayne, too.
Ah, yes, Lonnie Mayne. Yes.
Yes.
He had that term, there's excitement in the air.
And big Ed Wiskowski. And then he got a little taste of the Northeast. They put him over as the Polish Prince in 1982. But he only survived one television taping. He never caught on for whatever reason. I don't understand. Like Ox Baker. You know, the great Ox. He was there for a TV taping in 1980. And then the Wizard was managing him, and then boom, that was it. Ox didn't stay. That was a shame. I would love to have seen Ox against Backlund and everybody else along the East Coast at that time. But did you ever meet Ox Baker, GT, QT?
No, I didn't. That's a regret of mine. I haven't. I never met the,
well, I'll
met
tell you
the
what.
Man. No.
He was hysterical. And if you have time, you know he made an appearance on The Price is Right, believe it or not.
Oh.
And it's available to view on YouTube. It's still there. I mean, this was straight shooting. They called him at Doug Baker, come on down. And then, of course, Bob Barker looks at him. He's like, oh, my goodness. And he's like, yeah, I'm a pro wrestler. Yeah. And he won, too. Not the big grand prize, but he got up on the stage. And it was like, wow, Ox was great. His booming laugh could light up a hall. He was unbelievable.
Now, did he try to pick up any of the pretty contestants? The models in that show.
No, he was a gentleman, absolute gentleman, very nice guy. And, you know, he's very smart. You know, a lot of people like to have the stereotypes. They think wrestlers don't have a whole lot of brains. And it's like, well, you don't know which end is up then, Jack, because they're very intelligent, let me tell you. So Ox, he nailed it. He called the price, and I forget what the cat they had up there for him to try to figure out, but he did it.
Wow, fantastic. All right, okay. I will. That's my homework assignment, to look up Ox Baker on that show. That'll be great. Yes.
You'll
okay. Well, Nikita, one of the stars out here in Portland Wrestling, who later did work as a commentator for Portland Wrestling, was Stan Stasiak, the man that was known for his heart punch, and actually took Andre the Giant to his knees with a heart punch. You're mentioning Bruno Sammartino as a hard hitter. Stan Stasiak out here was also a hard hitter. Yes.
All right, QT, I'll tell you what. You touched on two things there. Now, the Buzzard Creek, Oregon contender, a contingent, yes, he was a big man. Stan Stipich was his name. And Nikolai was great friends with him. I never met Stan, but I met his son, Sean, when he was with WWE back in the late 90s. It almost looks exactly like the father. You know, when you see him up close, what they named him Meat, I believe. They gave him that goofy gimmick. But, you know, good-looking kid, well-developed. But Stasiak, I saw him, and it was a tag match. It was in Baltimore. And he hit Andre with that heart punch, and it was the last match of the night. And you got to remember back then, the Garden had the barriers, the guardrails. Baltimore did not. And there's a lot of stories I could tell you about crazy fan interaction, but we were able to get close. When Andre left that ring, there would be no reason in the world to sell at that point. He was heaving. It was like somebody ready to have a heart attack. He got nailed by that heart punch, and it's like, wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, Stasiak clocked him, you know. I mean, maybe he potatoed him by accident, but whatever. You know, Andre, he got nailed with it, so he didn't lose the match, obviously, but you could see he felt the effects of it. I always did, you know, when Stasiak won the belt from Morales on December the 1st, 1973, there's a little story that was posted on one of, I don't know, I follow so many of these wrestling sites, but it was comical. Somebody had put the whole transmission of what transpired tonight. I'm assuming it was Gorilla Monsoon, who was the booker at the time. So they said, this is how it went down. The booker comes up to Stasiak. He's lacing up his boots. So he says, okay, you know, you're wrestling Pedro tonight. Well, the ending's going to be You get a full Nelson on Pedro. Stays there, going, okay, yeah, yeah. Half paying attention because he's been through this 1,000 times. And then Pedro's going to kick off the buckle. Yeah, yeah, okay, okay. And then at the count of three, count of two, you lift your shoulder and Pedro stays down. Stasiak stops tying his boots and looks up and he says, you mean I win? And whoever the booker was said, yeah, you win. And Stasiak says, well, this is what, non-title tonight? They were at the Philadelphia Arena. He says, no, no, you win. You mean I win the belt? He says, you win the belt, Stan, you got it. And that was it. It was that easy. So, oh,
my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I never had the chance to see Pedro in the ring. But, you know, would you say that he had a very big influence on Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
Well, I would imagine. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, whoever does, but anything is possible, without a doubt. I mean,
okay.
You know,
right.
Whoever influences who, it is the it like me. I was influenced by the Chief, and like I said, I wanted to be Indian, but that was not going to be possible because Nikolai was Russian. But you know, you take a look at somebody like that, and I'm very fortunate. I'm a very, very fortunate man that I became very close friends, and I'm not blowing my own horn here just to make people, you know, stay, oh, my, that doesn't affect me. I don't care about that. I'm just giving you a fact, and the Chief, he became close friends with me the last 10 years of his life, and when I got to tell him different stories about one night I was in Baltimore, and I had a shirt. It had a big, you know, picture of an Indian Chief on there. It was orange and big letters saying Chief across it. And I'm standing there. And, you know, we're waiting for them to make their way to the aisle. He was wrestling Professor Tanaka. And here comes Tanaka. And at the time, he was recovering from a broken ankle from Calhoun. So Tanaka was wearing boots. So you just heard this swish, swish, swish as he was walking with the boots. And it's like, wow. And he's just eyeing the crowd. Because, you know, those people would attack you from time to time. So there goes Tanaka, and then all of a sudden you see the flash bulbs, and in the distance you see the headdress, and here he comes, and you actually hear the jingle of the bells. And I say, here comes my Chief. So I got my hand outstretched. I'm ready to shake his hand, and all of a sudden the lights go out. Somebody hit me from behind. It was a guard. And he just pummeled me. I'm like 17-year-old skinny kid. Boom, down I go. The Chief stops. He looks at the guy like, you ass, reaches over him and picks me up and shakes my hand. I'm like, holy, if I didn't already love him, that was it. I was over the moon. So the ending of the match, he's got the sleeper on Tanaka. You know, Tanaka, that's finished. He throws the salt. He gets the Chief and the referee. So I said, oh, I got to save the Chief. Boom, I go running down there. And the guards, they have to get Tanaka out because there's a near riot ready. So when the Chief, you know, he's half blinded from the salt. He's selling the gimmick, and he comes out of the ring, and I'm trying to help him up, and it was brushing the salt off him. Then here come the guards. You know, they pummel me again, but they take the Chief off. It was like, wow. But when I told him the story, and I said, Chief, you know, I come from an abused father. You know, you were there for me. When you spoke to me on those interviews, I felt like you were talking to me. He almost had tears in his eyes. He said, we were just doing our job. Like he said, when they would work at Cowtown, which is in New Jersey, believe it or not, there is a southern part of New Jersey. When you come across the bridge from Delaware, it looks like you're in Iowa somewhere. Everybody thinks Jersey is, you know, cultural, ethnic neighborhoods and factories, but no, there is a southern part of New Jersey that is cornfield and farmland. And Chief said, you know, we would work in Cowtown. He said, we'd be stepping over piles of what they call cow patties to make our way to the ring. But, you know, when we weren't in the Garden or the Spectrum or someplace like that, or Baltimore, you know, then we would make money during the week at the high schools and things like that, and gymnasium. So, boom, you know, that's how they did it. But it touched my life, and I was lucky enough to be able to tell him and spend time with him. And it's funny, I'll tell you, QT, that movie, did you mention Brush with Danger that I was in? And see, I'll tell you real quick, is this half hour or hour show?
Oh, this is an hour show.
Oh, good, good, good. It would probably take 8 hours for me, but I'll get it out. So how I made it to the acting was, we were doing documentaries for wrestling. And do this one, do that one. So somebody says to me, it was Evan Ginsberg, associate producer of The Wrestler. I've known Evan for many, many years when he used to do Wrestling Then and Now newsletter. And Evan said, those are acting credits. I said, so what, Evan? What does that mean, acting credit? What the heck do I care for the acting? So then somebody in Baltimore, really a great company, Midmar Press, they were doing a horror movie. So they said, Nikolai and I were, local Baltimore guys. We'd be on television appearing for these Manic Monday segments where we would sing Manic Monday and, do these kind of appearances. So they said, how would you like to be in this horror movie? I said, yeah, that'd be great. Because the character I was playing was called Captain Sildmack. And I said, wow, I know that name. Kurt Sildmack wrote The Wolfman from 1939. And the guy was like one of the co-producers and owner of the company. He's like, wow, I'm impressed. It's like, oh, I'm a big Universal Monster fan. So, yeah, I knew that immediately. So we did that, and I got a little bite out of it. So, the acting bug. So then Darren Aronofsky, when he was doing The Wrestler, Evan contacted me, and he said, Aronofsky, he wants to really get the background on all of this stuff. Can you and Nikolai come to New York? I said, sure, we'll be there. So we met him at the Transportation Center. It's really neat when you go there. There's a big statue of Jackie Gleason as Ralph Cramden outside of the New York Transportation Center because, Ralph was the bus driver. I thought that was really cool. So we go there, and it was the teeth of a blizzard that was coming. I'll never forget the date. It was December the 5th, 2002, and I say that because that was the year of my prostate cancer, QT. And I'll give this quick public service message. Men, get yourself checked. I was saved. I did have to have the surgery, but early detection still gave me a good quality of life and kept me going. So always get tested. Watch yourself. In that regard, it's a silent killer for men. So anyway, we go. We meet with Aronofsky. This was before they put pen to paper with anything on The Wrestler. And Evan would verify this. So, we gave our ideas and was working with the first writer for a while there. Was not in it. That didn't work out. They felt like they didn't want to go that way. Johnny did get a little part in there. He's the guy, if you remember at the autograph session, he's the guy with his head down on the table. Because Johnny Valiant was there that night also, I should mention. So that was good. So I got the acting bug from there. When I left Baltimore, we came out here to Seattle, and then was like, I'm going to do the, really kick it at acting into high gear. So I met Livia Chung. She spells her name Z-H-E-N-G. But I met her at University of Washington, and we kind of grew together as the acting profession. And Livia, since then, has gone on to USC and graduated. She's like a high professor and knows her things very well. But when we made this movie, we shot it was Oscar eligible, not nominated, but we were one of the top 300 movies of that year. It was 2 years ago for the 87th Oscars that we were in the running. And me too is one of the top actors in the movie. So it was like, I'll be damned, I've got a shot at Oscar. It's pretty neat. But, 300 is a long way from getting down to the top five. So still, it was a great honor. So as we were filming, we did part of it in Seattle and the other part we do in LA. Before Chief died, he called me and he said, Nikita, I want you to take care of my niece. I'm like, yeah, sure, Chief, anything. I said, what do you need me to do? She's out in Hollywood. She's an actress. I'm like, holy, what kind of heck am I going to – I'd love to be there myself. How am I going to help her? But I'll do whatever I can. So while we were filming the Seattle segment – or the L.A. segments, Livia comes to me and she says, Nikki – she calls me Nikki – I want you to redo this scene. I don't like it. It's a detective office scene. She said, you know what to do. You go rewrite it. You fix it. I said, okay, I'll take care of it. I said, hey, Liv, can I hire actors for it? She's like, I don't care as long as she's local. I said, oh, yeah. And she's a union, too, so that's perfect. So I called Melissa, Melissa Craig, beautiful girl, great actress. I said, Melissa, how would you like to be in a movie? Speaking role, you'd be working with me for a female director. Nobody going to harass you. Nobody going to bother you. You get to do your thing. Everything is beautiful and nice. And she did, and it turned out great. We had wonderful chemistry and a great scene together, QT. So I was able to uphold my obligation to my friend. I upheld my promise because thank God, because I didn't know how I was going to pull it off. It's like, how the heck am I going to help her in L.A., you know? But it's like, it worked out. Always keep the faith. Never give up, and it'll always work out.
Wow, that's very good advice, a very good one, one that has helped me in the past, especially through my military service. And, Nikita, when you talk about southern New Jersey, I went through boot camp in Cape May, New Jersey.
Beautiful.
Yes.
I love Cape May because, you know, there's the Cape May Lewes, Delaware, where they have like a ferry that goes back and forth. Beautiful section.
Yes.
I mean, oh, excellent. Hey, good job, QT. You serviceman. I salute you. Very good.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
I was never in the military, but I did the own. I was police, so you know I did my thing for the homeland. I did it that way.
Oh, now here's a question: Have you done any wrestling shows, especially in the mid '90s, on military bases for the troops that may have saw action in Desert Storm?
Oh yeah. Well, no, that Desert Storm. I don't think we were in Norfolk Base. One time doing a show down there. I remember that.
Oh, okay.
And Fort Dix, we were doing the show Fort Dix. You know, different, there's probably a couple more. Brain's a little dusty right now, but yeah, well, without a doubt. And I tell you, even with the Soviet gimmick, they didn't care. Because it was so crazy, because, you know, Nikolai had switched over once the communism died, and he was babyface. But he would want to sing God Bless America, and people would say, no, we want to hear a Soviet national anthem. That's a Nikolai. They love you for who you were. They don't care what side of the fence you're on as far as wrestling goes. They loved you for who you were, and that's what they want to hear. So then he'd belt that out, and everybody would just go home happy, and that was it.
Wow. Well, Nikita, you played Mick Thompson in the video, Brush with Death. Would you say that Nick Thompson closely parallels you in real life?
Brush with Danger. Yes, QT, yeah. He does. And it's a mix of Dirty Harry and Starsky and Hutch, who were my favorites in the 70s growing up. I mean, hey, look, what cop doesn't like Dirty Harry? I mean, he was the all-time idol. That's like when people were bad-mouthing Clint Eastwood when he had the empty chair gimmick for the politics a couple of years ago. I said, look, I don't care about what you feel politically, don't make fun of Clint Eastwood or I'll knock your damn teeth out, okay? Don't you badmouth Dirty Harry. And, yeah, but that was me, how I was on the street. You know, you didn't mess with people, you know, like police get the bad reputation. Some do, all right, without a doubt. But majority that I work with, 95%, they're to help people, without a doubt. And when you see, like, an elderly lady get knocked down, have her purse stolen, and then or some rat punches her in the mouth and knocks out her teeth, and when you knock them down, they break the hip. It's like, how the heck you can do that to people? Well, you know, sometimes they screw up in the head from the drugs or whatever, but it's like, that's what we were there for. Because I grew up in the neighborhoods of Baltimore. I was a street kid. So, you know, we didn't get into any of these, what they go on the news and make out, racial disparity. We didn't do that. We all hung out together. None of that bothered us. That's gimmick for news and politicians to play with. We were there for each other, and we took care of each other. And based upon that interaction in the neighborhoods, it was like, you know, what do I want to do with my life? Because I was a good computer guy. And when the computers were in their infancy, because I was in high school, I graduated in 76. So it was like, that was when you were punching the cards and putting them through and they run through like in a washing machine. It was long before the advanced technology, but it was like, I don't like this stuff. I'm an outside kind of a guy. So then the police caught my eye, and it wasn't just the action on television that did it. because I would talk to the neighborhood police, and they said, this job is writing and fighting. There's no shooting usually or anything like that. You know, you're listening to people's complaints, you're a problem solver, and you're here to keep people safe. And I said, you know, I like that. So then I joined in 79, and I spent 27 years there. And in the middle, I got involved with wrestling. And that's why my story was crazy, because in the daytime, I'm this good guy fighting for justice in the streets of Baltimore. And then at night and on the weekends, I'm this Russian heel running around doing dastardly things to Americans and bidding on the country. And it was like, you know, one time I had a Green Beret. We were doing a show in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Believe it or not, folks, there was an Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
So we're doing the gimmick, and this guy says, I'm going to kick your ass after the show. Yeah, so-and-so. You know, I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And I'll be damned, QT, I'm going outside the door. He's a Green Beret. Let me back up. He's a Green Beret. I'm going out the door, and there he is. He says, hey, you commie son of a bitch. I'm like, whoa, pal. No more accent, no more nothing. I said, look, I pull out my badge. I said, I'm one of you. Take it easy. It's all entertainment. Take it easy. He's like, no kidding. I'm like, yeah. So he's like, oh, I was going to beat the hell out of you. I'm like, take it easy. But see, that's
holy
great
smoke.
Because
wow,
that means you're doing your job. You're getting over. Today, I don't think anybody cares. You know, it's been beaten to death as far as, you know, his exposés. You know, like when John Stossel did the thing with Dr. Schultz, and it's like, okay, so what are you going to do next? Tell the kids about Santa Claus? I mean, geez, what a public service you did, pal. Great job.
Well, it looks like we have a caller from the 918 area code. Caller from the 918, do you have a question for Nikita?
I do. Nikita, what was your favorite match in history?
Oh, my goodness. My favorite match, without a doubt, and the chief and I kind of got into an argument. Not argument, but he was dismayed. He said, what was your favorite angle? I said, you and Patera. Patera, not Valentine. I said, chief, you and Patera. Actually, Spiros Arion, but I got to see more of the chief against Patera, and it goes back to, Jill, it was August 1st, 1977, in the Garden, and the chief was avenging Billy White Wolf's injury by Patera, and that is one of my favorite matches. It's a tie. The second one is a tag team match, the two chiefs, Peter Maivia and Strongbow, against Tanaka and Fuji, October 24th in the Garden, 1977. What a war. I mean, those guys, it was just perfectly put together.
I remember
and
that.
They were setting up. Oh, yeah. I mean, they didn't lose, but, you know, by pinfall, but it was because Maivia got his head cut open by Tanaka and Fuji, so they stopped the match, and then Chief was going to fight the two of them together. And he was doing a good job, but you're not going to beat Tanaka and Fuji one against two. And then Maivia makes the comeback from the dressing room with his head half bandaged, and, oh, man, the place just comes unglued. Well, you know, people actually tried to get into the ring, and last night I was watching. I go back in time. It was a TV version of that same match, and it was shown the same date. It was Saturday night, shown in New York. It was taped January the 10th of 78, but it was shown on January 28th. And even on television, people were so annoyed by Tanaka and Fuji that they attacked them. And Professor, he came right in and took care of it. I mean, boom, one, two, three. And it's funny because the very first time that I ever went to a show, it was in Baltimore. It was on November 28th, 1973, and Tanaka and Fuji and Chief were left in the Battle Royal, and Tanaka won, and then he got to wrestle Pedro Morales. Well, the first time I ever seen a bad fan interaction was that night. When Professor came out of the ring, this goof decided he was going to lay a forearm in on the Professor. Professor looked at him like, you crazy? He hit him with a chop, and that goof flew back four rows. I mean, it was like, you've got to be crazy. That man looks like he could walk through the brick wall. But thank you, caller. That's a great question. What was your favorite match, caller?
My favorite match with you in it was in a small town called Hinton, Oklahoma.
Oh, this sounds like Mr. Justice to me.
It's Mr. Justice, my friend.
I could tell. See that? You did a dirty job of my comrade, the Canadian lumberjack, and then he cheated. QT, I tell you what, this guy, Mr. Justice, if anybody wants a great referee, he is the best. I must admit, he put me down. I challenged him for arm wrestling, and I tried with two hands. I couldn't put him down. He knows his business. He could take any heat. He could take any kind of shot that they want to dish at him. Mr. Justice is your man, and he keeps the justice inside that ring, believe me.
Now, did you call Mr. Justice Mr. Lumberjack?
No. I was managing the Canadian Lumberjack.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Justice was the referee for the match.
Oh, all right.
Maniac Mike was the opponent. Yeah, he was a USA kind of guy. I know. That's all right, Justice. We ain't done yet. One day you and I still going to settle up.
We got to. We got to, and I'm ready for you, brother.
Now, look at that. Oklahoma, independent wrestling for Crowbar Championship Wrestling there. They have it out here in the Northwest. Baltimore, everybody's got their own little promotion, even though Vince McMahon, yeah, he's Big Daddy. He's got the big thing going for him. But you know what? People love that little promotion. They love it's like NWA is running in New York now. They had the NWA Big Apple debut Friday night. You know, good luck to them. Andrew Anderson, good friend of mine for many, many years. In fact, when he was Siberian Tiger all the way back in the 90s, he was working with Nikolai and I. And then he progressed to Ole Anderson, blessed him, and said, here, take the Anderson name. So, and people love, it's kind of like, you know, when we grew up in neighborhoods, we had like little convenience stores. Yeah, you could have your big box stores, but that's where it is. That's the nuts and the bolts for people that are true to you. You can talk to the wrestlers. You can touch them. And you got to have the biggie, but you got to have the little guys in between as well. And that's what we do.
Well, that's
and
true.
You do well.
I agree with that. Yes. Okay. Well, Nikita, WWE superstar Val Venus made such hit movies such as Saving Ryan's Privates, Harry Twitter, and Glad He Ate Her. How was his movie
run.
Made?
Don't even ask. None. I never saw him run.
Oh, okay.
Oy vey.
Well, I was
going to
ask
how
did how
no. My wife is going to hit me with everything. No. I don't even know that. I don't see none of it.
Oh, okay. You now, might want to watch Val Venus meets Shelton Benjamin's mother backstage, and he does a YouTube clip that I think you will enjoy. Yes.
I tell you what. I did used to laugh at his character. I was thoroughly entertained by it. That's like the last time I tuned in on a regular basis when they had Vince and Stone Cold. That was great. I got to admit. It wasn't much wrestling, but it was a great entertainment thing to watch. What the heck is Vince and what's Stone Cold going to do to him this week? And so, you know, that was all right. And then Val Venus and the Godfather with the hose. Hey, you know, who the only woman to win the hardcore title is? Do you know this, QT?
Hardcore title? It wouldn't have been Sensational Sherry, would it?
No. No, it was one of the Godfather's hoes. And in real, her name is Cindy Snow. Or Bobcat, too. Bobcat. She used to wrestle the New Jersey circuit as Bobcat. And then Cindy Snow, yeah. She was, because what happened was there was a lot of confusion throughout the match. And I think Hardcore Holly just, he got hit and fell down and she covered him, 1, 2, 3. And then somebody came out immediately and pinned her. But technically, she's in the record books. She was Hardcore title holder.
Wow.
And she's a great girl, too. I've known her over the years. Beautiful girl. Very beautiful inside and out.
Oh, what part of the country does she hail from?
New Jersey.
Oh, okay. New Jersey, okay. Wow.
Now,
right.
I'll tell you what. When you talk about independent wrestling, Dennis Corluzzo, who's no longer with us, Dennis was, he was a very good promoter. And he had, he was good friends with Jim Cornette. Dennis had a standing open invitation to Monday Night Raw. And, you know, he would be able to use some WWE talent and develop his own. He had quite the following in the New Jersey area. He was NWA New Jersey at that time. And he had some, you know, great people that worked for his organization. And a great referee I shout out to as well, Fred Richards, one of my favorites as well. Fred was a good guy, always did a good job and a good friend. But Dennis, if he had cooperation from some of the other promoters, if they had worked together instead of against each other, in my opinion, I think they would have gave Vince not a run for his money, but he certainly would have maybe paid better attention because they had quite a following. And that's how you get it done. You give people what they want. You don't have to go out there and swing a hammer and have bleed a pint of blood, even though what Mr. Justice is asking about favorite matches, you know, from day one, when I turned on the television, I had my mother squawking over my ear that it was this, it was that. I said, Mom, I don't care. Leave me alone. I want to watch. So we always had the skeptics trying to tell us the light about what we were watching. But I watched Bruno destroy Lou Albano at the Baltimore Civic Center one night. And anytime you want to sell out, put Lou in the ring against any face, just have him murdered, and you'll have a sellout. So this was no exception. And Lou was never afraid of the blade. And in fact, in the match against Superfly Snuka in the Garden, he dropped his blade and he pulled out a straight razor and just finished the job. And so Lou, he would give you the blood. Because it was funny because he had this goofy thing he wore that had pockets, and Monsoon was doing the color, and even he said, Albano just went into his pocket. What did he bring out? And it's like, oh, shit. He's like, I'm blade. He ain't supposed to say anything, but it was too late. You know, he already pulled it out. And it was like, yeah, Lou was that crazy. So when, you know, after this match was done with Bruno, with blood all over the place, so my friends and I, we go down and we're like, that's real blood. Look at it. You know, like, it's no phony. And all the way back to the dressing room, and it was like, man, oh, man, unbelievable. I guess we sound like some kind of barbarians or something, but when we were kids and we would go to the wrestling matches and there was blood, I mean, that was like an orgasm for us. We went crazy. I mean, that was it. And Gorilla Monsoon said it on a document. It was a mini documentary from a show called Evening Magazine one time. And he said, you know, people are basically sadistic. And he's right. You ever notice when there's a bad accident on the highway, everybody's got to look at it. Doesn't matter.
Slow down, yeah.
Yeah, they want to see what it is. Oh, my God, that's horrible. And it's like, well, then what the hell are you looking for if it's so horrible, you know? But because people are sadistic, they like that. I mean, look at boxing and football. You know, when you get to know what football is really about, you got to take your hat off to the guys, especially the ones that are linemen in the pit, as they call it, because, I mean, it's just like bone crushing all the way through. And I was fortunate enough to follow John Unitas, and I read Art Donovan's book called Fatso, and that's the name of the book, and Artie was a big man, and he said, you know, every game, as soon as the game started, they were right after Unitas trying to just wipe him out any way, shape, or form, you know, trying to cripple the man to get him out of the lineup. And I remember one year, it was Earl Morrill got hurt, John Unitas was hurt, so Tom Matty, who hadn't quarterback since high school, they let him do it, and they had all the plays written down and taped to his arm. And one of the linemen from the opposition, they grabbed his arm and basically yanked his arm out of the socket, trying to rip that play graft off of his arm. It's like, holy mackerel. So, but anyway, back to wrestling, king of sports. And I'll tell you, I've been so lucky. Everybody I've ever met, QT, in wrestling has been wonderful. They, you know, when I walked through the doors, I thought I knew everything. I didn't know how to get to first base with it. Instead of saying, well, that's your problem, who cares, they took me in. They took me under their wing. They protected me. They showed not just Nikolai, but everybody else we worked with. And it's a brotherhood. It's something where you do take care of each other. And I don't care what capacity you're talking, whether you're a referee, whether you're a ring attendant, whether you're a timekeeper, we're all in the same profession, and we look out for each other, brothers and sisters. And the fans, you wouldn't have anything without them. You have to respect them. Let them spit on you. Let them do whatever. That's great because they paid the money, and you're the entertainment, and let them get it out. It's the best catharsis in the whole world, pro wrestling.
I'd agree. And Nikita, talking about catharsis, did you take up fencing after you worked with the Mighty Maccabee?
Oh, no. But that's a great question. Oh, QT. That card, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have the poster. I'm one of the fortunate. There's talking about posters. Now, that's a poster. Shuckle Slam, they called it, too. I mean, that was like Vince McMahon had some gimmick battle royal years ago with a lot of the legends in it. That was a precursor to it because Kenny Patera was there. He didn't work. He was doing play-by-play. We had everybody there for Maccabee Mania. Sheik against Mighty Maccabee was the main event, and that was a classic. Even Freddie Blassie was there, and Freddie did his song, Pencil Neck Geek, and I tell you, I had tears streaming down my face watching him do it live. It was hysterical. Freddie took me under his wing over the years. I was fortunate. He gave me a lot of guidance. Of course, I idolized the man. I said, I used to hate you, you old son of a gun, when you used to do nasty stuff to the chief. But I said, also, I loved you on the other hand because you were hysterical. I mean, Freddie could describe going to the bathroom and it would be, you know, have you in stitches. It's just, he's that kind of guy. He's got that kind of talent. But, you know, look at him. He was on Dick Van Dyke, a lot of other television, Johnny Carson, all kind of television shows throughout the years because he was that natural. But that afternoon, and it was an afternoon show, it's funny how Jeff took and made that DVD. It was a two-part DVD. You know, QT, that was the biggest-selling wrestling DVD, I believe, of 2004, whatever the year is. I could be mistaken. I'll take a look on IMDb, but that was even Howard Finkel, the great Howard Finkel, even he has it in his collection. I said, Howie, you got the Shuckle Slam DVD? Of course, he said. Anything pro wrestling, he's got it. So you better believe it. It's like, and there you go. Again, like Howard. He was a wrestling fan. That's how we all, everybody is, they have the passion, probably something from their childhood or something that you shared with your father. 1997 is when it was released. Okay, that was the biggest seller that year. And it's something that just, you can't, it owns you once you get bit by it. Some people don't want anything to do with it. And you know what? The old song that's like trying to tell a stranger about rock and roll, it's the truth. If you don't get it, you won't. Just walk away and say good luck to you. But if you have in your blood wrestling, it never leaves you. It will never deceive you. It will always be there with you. And I know, you know, you watch old matches, and they're still great. I watch matches 100 times, without a doubt, and there they are. Boom. And the funniest thing, too, QT, in my life, the most thing, you know, even with acting, and I've been around a lot of big actors over the years doing different things, they don't want to talk about wrestling. That's always the centerpiece. People outside, you know, the police world and talking to politicians, if they want to talk about wrestling. They don't care. The world could be coming to an end. They want to ask you questions about wrestling. Like, I tell all people that know me in my life, I said, it's like the nucleus of life is pro wrestling, believe me.
Well, I think it's safe to say that pro wrestling and indie wrestling is the purest example of blue-collar work ethic in the United States. Yes.
Yes.
That's my
yes,
quote.
Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
Very good. Well, you know, out here in the Northwest, we have Dale Pierce out here now. Do you remember Dale Pierce?
Oh, well, Dale Pierce I just saw at La Problemita's in Bremerton, Washington, last week.
There
Dale
you go.
Pierce.
And yeah. Yes, and Dale and I are good friends. He used to do a lot with the Ohio wrestling, and I'll tell you, he's a great man. He has overcome some challenges recently in his life, and just a good friend of mine.
Cancer himself.
Give a shout out to Dale Pierce.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Nikita, you'll have to make it up to La Problemitas in Bremerton, Washington, where maybe you'll see Sign Guy in action refereeing, and hopefully he won't take another beer bottle over his head from the Yemeni assassin, Dayafullah Dabashi. You'll have to come up with this. Yes.
It would be my honor and pleasure, QT. I would love to make the show up there. Von Hess runs the shows up there, right?
Oh, yes. Franken Hess. Von Hess. Franken Hess, yes.
Very good, yes.
Well, Nikita, I didn't even get to two of my pages of questions to ask you. I'm going to have to get together with Sign Guy and rebook you, because I know Sign Guy has a lot of questions that he would like to ask. Would you be willing to come back on in about 3 months, 3 or 4 months?
QT, I never met a microphone or camera I didn't love. Be my pleasure.
Oh, very nice. Okay. All right. All right, and I would also like to thank our caller from the 918 area code for calling in. That's nice. Okay.
Thanks for having me.
And it does look like we do have Sign Guy. Sign Guy, would you like to ask one parting question to Nikita before we sign off?
I would love to. First of all, thanks for being on the show, Mr. Brezhnikov.
My pleasure, Sign Guy.
You alluded to it a minute ago. No secret up here. Dale Pierce recently overcoming prostate cancer, something that a lot of wrestlers in the last couple of years have battled and beaten. A couple of the Hart brothers have had it. Dale Pierce, of course, a few others. I understand that you also defeated that. Could you talk a little bit about what the battle was like for you and how you're doing now?
Yes, we talked about that earlier. You weren't there. QT and I discussed it. In 2002, I was diagnosed because my father had troubles through the years, not prostate, but he died from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, so they watched me carefully. And one time I went for it's the blood. Don't worry about that other thing that they do to you. It's too late at that point anyway. You want a blood test to catch it early. So my reading was a 4. And I even had state athletic commission doctors say, that's not bad. Don't let them do the biopsy. That's torture. But I trusted this doctor. He biopsied it. He said, I hate to tell you. I just got back from a great weekend with Nikolai and the Sheik. We were doing Comic-Con in Detroit. And I call that my last great weekend, because when I got home Monday, the doctor called me and told me I had the surgery. And, you know, I'm fine. Everything is great. I'm alive. Today's surgery, a good friend of mine, he had it done. Now they do the robotic. They go through the belly button. Getting your tonsils out was worse now from what I hear. So get tested, men, and you'll be alive. And don't worry about the other thing. The flag still goes up and down the pole. It just takes a little work. Don't worry about it. But get it done.
Well, I'm glad you are doing well. Since we're coming up on the end of the show, if there's anything you want to say to the listeners, plug or promote anything you would like, why don't you go ahead and do that?
You can find me on Facebook, Internet Movie Database, or Google me, and you know all my stuff is there. I don't do any specific websites. Keep up with wrestling. Follow wrestling. It is the king of sports. It's what we love, and it loves you back. Stay with the wrestling fans. And follow my friends, QT and Sign Guy. They got a great show. The Turnbuckles. That's it. You're into the Turnbuckles.
Well, we
the Turnbuckle
we do hope
Turmoil.
Turnbuckle Turmoil, yes. And we do hope that you get to watch that Val Venus clip with Shelton Benjamin's mother.
Oh, my goodness. No speak English.
Yes.
No listen yet.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Nikita, and thanks, Sign Guy. I hope that your job at the cafeteria went well. That for the when you serve those all those patrons, the long lines. Okay. Yes.